we've been trained into a mindset at a very young age to think that if you're actually an authority figure, you're exempt from morality, that you can actually tell someone to do something and the order followers, anybody who is under that government, must obey and do what they're told. And so that obeying mindset is statism. The idea that someone can be an authority figure, that's statism. And that is mental slavery. And they treat government as a religion, because statism is a religion. It's your mind believing that there's an authority in man. So, you know, you can still believe in God as long as you believe in a God called government, because if you don't, you're going to be thrown into a cage. If you don't, this is what's going to happen to you. Then you're enslaved, because they get to choose what to do with your own property, whether that's your labor, what you do with your own body. Fruits of your labor, that's something you own. That's ownership. If you say that someone else has the right to your ownership, you're saying that you don't own you. Do you own 5% of you? Do you own 20% of you? 50%? No, you own 100% of you. Why would you not own 100% of your property? So if we want to get something done in society, how do we get it done? Well, let's look at how everything gets done in society without government. Voluntary interaction, the free market. If there's a demand, there will be a supply. How do we prevent a burglar from going into our house? How do we secure our property? Well, it starts with you. It starts with our fellow friends and family. It starts with our neighbors. We can't rely on some authority figures to do that for us, because then we centralize the power and we create an involuntary relationship when we give these people the authority to somehow play God. Should I share a little bit just like what the 1 minute question is? Yeah. So basically it's just, what is the most important thing or idea, or what is just important that people should know from your own perspective, your own unique perspective? What is it that people should know? Like, for 1 minute straight, whatever comes to your mind, speak to it. We're getting a lot of clips, which is good. We need to share it more, because anybody who joins this call, I mean, I would love if they record a 1 minute clip too.
You really have to consider what you want to fill in that minute. Welcome to Living on Purpose. Today is Friday, November 17th, 2023, and we have a LiveWire guest here from Florida, Corey Enderlot. Hi, Corey.
Hello. Cool.
Connie introduced me to your work with the End of Slavery Summit in the fall of 2022. And yeah, I learned a lot through a lot of the speakers, and I just found you quite an intriguing person, the way that you were presenting everything, coordinating everything, and you have this massive education passion to help people be aware of what's going on. And so I really value that.
Thank you. I'm just along for the ride. Whatever happens, happens. I don't care. You can put me on the spot. You can throw me on fire and I'm ready.
Well, that's
stop,
great.
Drop, and roll.
Yeah. Hello, Stuart.
Good to see you.
All right. Stuart and I are in the same writing group for many, many sessions now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Look at
admiring
this.
Admiring of each other's writings. And Stephanie has joined us and brought along her friend Alicia. Is that how you say Alicia?
Yes.
All right.
Wow. Look at this get together.
Isn't this fun?
It.
Yeah, me too. Laura, thank you for joining us. I'm so glad.
Thank you for inviting me, Lynn.
Here's Connie. Now, Connie is the one who told me all about Corey a year ago.
Ooh. Wow. There she is.
There she is.
I'm on the road again, but I'm going to be pulling over sometime soon.
Always on the road. Last time I talked to her, she was on the road.
I've known Connie for 10 years, and she has always been on the move.
I just have this energy. What is it? Insatiable energy or whatever. It won't stop. I don't know. I'm not even on any coffee or anything.
That's the wonder of Connie, for sure. And Valerie has joined us. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Corey. Everyone else.
Yeah, so Valerie did a little research on you, Corey, and found more of your books that you wrote.
How's it going?
Very good. Thank you. Yeah, quite a collection of books you have. Very different topics. That's what I mean. You know, natural health, connection with nature, slavery, and Taoism.
Yes.
Yeah.
There are ties between them, I promise.
Oh, yeah. Well, for sure. It's very interesting. All of them. Yeah. So it's cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for checking that out. Yeah. Over the past few years, I've done a lot of stuff like that.
You know, I have a friend, when I started telling her about the work around the End of Slavery Summit, she became quite agitated about me using the word slave or slavery. What you were pointing to a lot in your work around it is that there's an impression that slavery existed for a while and then it stopped, you know, sort of really simplistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're calling this the End of Slavery Summit 2, your current project, right?
Yes, as a continuation to show that there is another project that I'm doing that involves a lot of speakers around this issue, but any other issue that is relevant to people also around those basic ideas that underlie what we usually consider the definition of slavery. So that concerns ownership or freedom or holistic living, right? Anything that has to do with a mind that is free and able to think for itself.
Hmm. That's what I actually got that impression, Corey, from watching your short video, that it's not that much about slavery per se, but when you say the word slavery, most people imagine, you know, the historical slavery, some kind of unfortunate things with what's happening in history. But from your short video, I thought that you were talking a lot about independent thinking versus orthodox thinking, the ability to think out of the box, not just to digest whatever you're being fed and think for yourself and stuff like that. That if you don't do that, if you just kind of follow the rules, follow and just kind of swallow whatever you're being fed, that's kind of in a sense some slavery. So you kind of become a slave to whatever happens to you, as opposed to have some agency about your life. That's something like that. That's what kind of my interpretation was of your broad term of slavery. That I don't know if it's how close it to what you're talking about, but that was my impression from that short video Lynn circulated. I thought that's an interesting way of thinking of slavery in a much broader sense of it.
So I actually, Lynn, if it's okay, I can kind of like abbreviate on this point. And thank you for having me, by the way. I appreciate it. Like, I have to thank you very much. I love this, being able to talk to all of you at the same time here and get input, because I want to hear from you guys, you know, how you guys would define it, how you guys would look at it. Please do let me know. I've looked at slavery under many different perspectives, and I think they can all line up to what I'm talking about, but mostly due to the fact that I got a lot of this inspiration and this knowledge from the abolitionists themselves, those who were directly fighting slavery in the 1800s. Chattel slavery, we're particularly referring to the physical, you know, ball and chain type of slavery where you don't really get anything for your work and it's just brutal. So it's very in your face, but they were talking about other forms of slavery as well. And I point to those individuals, those abolitionists in my work. And I say, look at these other abolitionists who, you know, we're not really taught them in history. We're not taught them in our schooling system, but yet they were like on the front lines. Some of them got national prominence, like William Lloyd Garrison. Lysander Spooner got national prominence when he did his document on the Constitution. Even though he's anti-Constitution, he used it against slavery. You know, it was amazing. These individuals knew how to strategize within the system because he was a lawyer. So he understood that there was the system that was upholding slavery in different forms. And there had to be an end to this one form of slavery for an awakening to occur, like a mass amount of change to happen. And it did. And a lot of them did not want a civil war either. A lot of them were pacifists. So these are things that not a lot of people look at, and historians can actually agree with me. And I've looked at historians' definitions of slavery, and they'll deduce it down to simply theft or ownership of another individual. So if it's just ownership of another individual, and then they go even further and they say there's such a thing called mental slavery. Mahatma Gandhi says there's mental slavery. You know, there's a lot of other historical figures that coined this term mental slavery. Well, what is that? That's not physical. So all I did was really ask questions. I'm like, why are all these terms being brought up by famous historians, by these people in the 1800s? And how come nobody really investigated this or really brought it together? So that's exactly what I did. You know, I made my video titled Political Slavery, and that's the exact term Lysander Spooner called it. And that one was one of my most successful videos, at least on some of the mainstream platforms. And I just asked about 16 questions to people and got them thinking about their own mindset, because the mental slavery is the most dangerous form, according to a lot of the people who study it. It's the root to all physical or any other form of slavery. And it's a tough subject. Yes, the word slavery can be fearful for people. But Lynn, you're right. I'm bringing back this term because it can't just end, period. There's always going to be some sort of slavery in the world in different forms or in different degrees. And being aware of it allows us to prevent it from manifesting again or manifesting in its different forms. For instance, I interviewed David Icke on my End of Slavery Summit. This is an individual that a lot of people may say, oh, well, he's a conspiracy theorist. He's talking about this or that. But he introduced to me a technological type of slavery. Well, did we ever consider the fact technology might bind us and control us or take ownership over our body? We have things like Neuralink that is being introduced by people like Elon Musk that can potentially control your thoughts. And so how far do we go into this sense of lacking self-control before we end up in another situation of slavery, although we don't call it the same type of slavery as the past? I'm merely asking questions. And that's why throughout my Slavery Gone for Good book, it's basically just questions and questions and questions throughout the whole book. It's not formatted like a normal book. It's done that way on purpose. And so then I also introduced those 16 questions, and I introduced them in different forms, and I have many different ways of delivering that. I now just made a 95 question quiz, a huge quiz for people with scenarios and everything to get them thinking. And that's all I can ever do, right? Because if there is mental slavery and we have this within our own mind, only we can really address this for ourselves.
Yeah, awesome. I remember this one image. There were so many images and so much material in your summit last year, Corey. One that really stuck with me was you can enslave somebody by making them work without paying them, or pay them to not work.
Right. And where's that money coming from? Right. And we just asked that question, is where does the money come from when people are given benefits by their government? How is it being taken care of? When a law is passed, how is that law enforced? And what happens when you disagree with something that you find to be immoral? That's a law, because legality is not morality. And so we really challenge the underlying psychology and philosophy and morality of these systems, because let's face it, going back to what Valerie mentioned, is there a tie between historic slavery and modern slavery? Absolutely. Because the first form of systemic slavery historically on the record comes back to Sumeria, which is the first form, the oldest form of government. So how come this first organized system of people was actually also considered historically the first form of systemic slavery? Well, it's because you built a system that supports it, that legitimizes it, that says it's okay. And throughout the works, and you can even look at Aidan Ballou and other individuals, part of the Liberator newspaper, which is why I call my project the Liberator 2, they talk about the history of governments. And they go far back and they say, look at this repeat of history and look how far back it goes, how brutal it has been through all the ages. We can call it tyranny, we can call it chaos, but at what point do we call it slavery? You can read a really good text, very easy to read, The Discourse on Voluntary Servitude by a man named Etienne de la Boetie. It's a French individual from, I think, the 13th century. Very old text, but it's not hard to translate. It's not disputed or anything like that. It's been reprinted many times. It was actually went all the way to India. That's how Gandhi was inspired to do what he did. People don't know that they read a lot of the texts that I'm reading. People didn't know that Gandhi grew up on Tolstoy's farm, which is named after Leo Tolstoy, who was an anarchist who studied the same abolitionist that I studied that talked about slavery. And that's why he wrote his text, The Slavery of Our Times. But people don't even know that exists. And historians that talk about slavery today only go so far as what is acceptable to talk about slavery. But I'm going beyond that and saying, well, are there other forms? And it's right in front of our face if we just take a little deeper look at the abolitionist. I even had to travel to some of the libraries in my area. I was living in Pennsylvania. I'm now in Florida. 7 months ago, I was in Pennsylvania, and I would travel an hour out of my way to go to a library. And they have in the back of the library old newspapers from the abolitionists that you cannot get online. You cannot access online whatsoever. I had to be a student in order to access it too. So like I had to go through all these hurdles, but I still found a way to access it and I sent it back to myself and I found amazing documents. I found amazing articles. And what else is hidden that I don't know about that is in these libraries that used to be public newspapers? Now it's private, hidden in some back room of some library. I find that insane, but that's because Boston was like a printing capital of the world in the 1800s. When you had the invent of the printing press, which was also created by Josiah Warren, one of the abolitionists that I studied, who created towns of his own for the Underground Railroad, who also was known as the most practical anarchist. He was an orchestra leader and an inventor. He did all these amazing things. He wasn't an anarchist with a mask on his face, you know, throwing fire in the street and causing a bunch of chaos. No, he was a gentleman who went around the states and promoted the end of slavery. And he also promoted the first ever like rotary press and printing press. And these guys were printing newspapers. If it wasn't for the advent of educational materials and the ability to share information worldwide, they would not have been able to share their message, which is why the internet now is such a great tool for sharing this knowledge. We may not realize this, but this is the next part of our evolution. Is ending all forms of slavery. So when I say the end of slavery summit, I really mean that, because now we have the ability to share knowledge en masse. In the 1800s, it was just beginning. So after thousands of years of chattel slavery, it was put to an end. Well, now we can end another practice that was done for thousands of years that they too recognized. And now we're simply refining on it even more, because in the 1900s, that's when you start to see a spark in the ideas that the abolitionists were talking about when it comes to political slavery and governments. You had Benjamin Tucker and his newspaper called Liberty that had literally some abolitionists actually support his paper and write for his paper. And so Lysander Spooner was like one of those individuals. And a lot of it was like anti-capitalist or anti-religion sometimes, but there were so many different newspapers. That was just one of them that was like more prominent. And you know, there were so many different ways of thinking. And then toward the late 1900s, you had Lou Rockwell and then the Mises Institute, Ludwig von Mises, and then the Austrian economics. Now they came into the scene and now they said, wait, we can actually live more prosperous without these controlling systems, because there's a spontaneous order within humanity that if we leave people be, the economy and everything will fix itself because it's the free market. And so they were talking about a sort of a free market, pro-capitalism, anti-government position. So they agreed with the abolitionist, and they simply took it a step further in another way. So everybody agrees essentially with the abolitionist when they study slavery. They disagree on some parts of the economics, but that's not the point. Like the abolitionist argued all day with people who were pro-slavery, who said, we need slavery for the economy, and what will we do without the slaves? Who will pick the cotton? And they were guiding into all these fights, but that wasn't the main concern. The main concern was that it was immoral and that it had to end. And so that's what they focused on, the morality and the conscience of everyday people. That's why they did not vote to change people's hearts and minds. They educated them directly. They reached out to their fellow man. They had anti-slavery society meetings all throughout the country. And some people were not part of those societies, like Lysander Spooner, but he was still promoting anti-slavery messages. You know, so again, we can't put ourselves in boxes, and we can all unite around the simple idea that humans want to be free, rather than getting into all the complex statistics and all this, well, what about this and what about that? Because if you know it's right to leave people alone, to not take their stuff, then let's stand on principle and let things handle itself. Because we worry so much, we make all these justifications like we did in World War II and saying, well, man, the capitalist, and then we create communism, and then communism killed millions of people, and then we create another ideology, and we create another ideology, all because we think we can justify immoral behavior to prevent possible immoral behavior. But we cannot allow any immoral behavior to begin with. There is no justification for bringing people to a concentration camp. There's no justification for going out and going to war and committing genocide like we have seen in World War II with democide, the number one cause of unnatural death. So that concerns me, because this is like not long ago. This was not even 100 years ago. But yet, if we want to understand the root cause to why that happened, it's because so many people were mentally enslaved by the head of propaganda ministers and all these people, and Hitler and Stalin, all these people, they had like ministers that were in charge of controlling people's minds. And they were using symbolism, they were using flags, they were using all this stuff to try to get people on their side and to push something that they as an individual would not do, but they would do because their order giver tells them to do it, or because their government tells them to do it. So they somehow exempt themselves from morality. They somehow legitimize slavery, and yet they are okay with it. They think it's actually necessary.
Yeah, there's so much in there. Now, you mentioned democide after genocide. What is democide?
Democide stands for death by government, and you can look up Dr. Rummel, who did the statistics on that. It is the number one cause of unnatural death. So you can talk about heart attack. You can talk about all these other types of what might be considered unnatural deaths. And he did the statistics, not even counting like millions of other wars. Like, he only counted certain wars in the 20th century alone, and it was already more than any other statistic he can find. It was insane. And there's probably a lot more that happens that we can't account for. But yes, he did a lot of math on that. He also, I think, wrote a book about it. There's a lot on just democide. You can look it up. It's a pretty mainstream term at this point.
Yeah, it's just it's one that I heard more recently. So I just wanted to be sure to clarify that. That's a big concern. Laura made a comment just a little bit ago there that laws aren't, you were talking about laws, and she says laws aren't passed, bylaws are.
Yeah, if she wants to abbreviate on that, she can. And also, I know she mentioned menticide. Yes, that's another term I think that was brought up by a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I do have a work with a bunch of medical professionals where we are addressing this mental slavery through a medical perspective. And that is one of the topics we go into, actually. So stay tuned on that. But yeah, Laura, if you want to talk about what you mean by bylaws, feel free.
Fantastic presentation. So thank you for inviting me, Lynn, and letting me know about Corey's work. I started on your 3-hour documentary. I don't even know where to start with all of your stuff. I would love to better know how to break it down and then be able to introduce people to your work by piecemeal, because slavery is still commonly occurring. And I think it actually comes back down to humanism generally, for then we focus on the hues of man, which are just aspects of us compared to the whole man, which is where we then stand in completeness with the ability to choose from the creative and unlimited and unspecified common law that is accessible to all of us. When we know how to remain in our private capacity without the bastardization or corruption of a counterfeit version of reality, such as what is created by any form of corporate governance that superimposes its authority onto us. So bylaws, by definition, would be man-made laws that are issued by corporate, incorporated corporate bodies, compared to laws that actually include the S of space and time, which are outside of any controllable construct, which is why we have courts of law, not laws. And then the law itself is multiple jurisdictions, land, air, and water. But when they're specified, then they're incorporated, and we get incorporated by the interface through the profile that we then file into submission to the corpse through, and then orate on its behalf, or the agent does, which is then when we get converted from first person in our own story to then being third person, which is the ward lunatic or minor, which is where our minds are mined. So that's a lot of a side tangent, though very relevant, because when people think that corporate mandates or bylaws are equal to laws, they're really not understanding the hierarchy of creation, which I don't know whether you're familiar with that construct.
I am.
And how you bring that into all of what you do. But fundamentally, that is one of the most important teachings I believe people need to be aware of in order to see that the grantor of dominion that gave us dominion over all things before we then created government to then superimpose its will on top of anything under its rule or jurisdiction. If people don't generally understand the mixed war we're in between the public and private, we got a problem.
Yeah, good points. people who follow my work go very deep into the American common law and a lot of what you're talking about. And I'm aware of it too. I have a lot of friends who do this, and myself included, actually. But I don't talk about it much online and among my works, mostly due to the fact that I personally do not see it to be the root cause of the problem. It is a way to handle the problem, but I don't see it as the root cause, primarily because I'm looking at the psychology of human beings and their mentality, which goes beyond words, titles, and all this claims and mumbo jumbo, legalese, I would rather call it. Now, I know that there's differences between this and that, and human and man and woman, but I'm going to use the word human a lot, and I hope you understand the context by which I use it. Because there were people in the 1800s, and I read their work, and they used the word too, and I understand their context. What matters to me is their actions, what they actually believe, and what they actually manifest into the world. And so I understand that people have used that terminology in order to do that, to trick people. They've done logos and symbolism. This is what we see, spelling, spells. It's all there. And you can try to break down every little thing. But I do think that the root cause is actually rather simple, and that the action is actually far even simpler than anybody usually mentions in the common law space. And most of them don't even talk about or even know about statism, which is the mental slavery that I speak of. Most of them never even heard of that. And I think that's a big problem, because if I consider that to be the root cause, then I don't think we'll ever really get out of this mess. We'll just replace it with another structure we think is to superimpose on nature, even if it's a structure we think is righteous. The problem is, it's like, if you take this from an Eastern philosophy point of view, our mind is taking control of the embodiment of our world. Essentially, we are overthinking. We're convoluting, structuring the world that cannot be structured, trying to define something that cannot be defined. And that is nature. That is the nature is the answer I speak of. It's an answer that is ever a question, which is why, you know, it humbles ourselves. We are the ones that question. Nature is the answer. This is what I usually say. So it makes us question ourselves, our own mentality, because we are prone to fault. We are not perfect, and we are born of nature. So nature was there before us. These are just some of the things I talk about. And I do equate nature and natural law, actually, because everything in nature operates by law. I understand there's certain like names and definitions for things. You know, like Mark Passio will have a whole definition of natural law. I don't know if you've ever heard of Mark Passio. He's an individual that got me into a lot of these communities, actually, as a content creator, just naturally through running into him. And he has great work concerning natural law, but he doesn't talk about this assembly stuff or common law stuff at all either. But I do consider his work to be of the root cause. See, it's because we're studying statism. And so until I see statism being talked about, I just don't think the cause for privatization and all this, like, you know, I'm a private vehicle, I'm traveling, I'm not driving, and all this stuff, I don't think it's actually going to help people. It's just going to cause more confusion. And it's going to require people learn things that are actually new, when the truth is always here. It's always been there. It's always been here. And we simply need to recognize it's there. It's an embrace. There's nothing actually new to learn. It's the funny thing. It's like, I'm not introducing anything new to learn. I'm introducing new perspectives to see the reality that is already here, and showing that there's people of the past who had certain perspectives. But like, our message is like above and beyond, right? We're trying to look at a higher authority than man. And that's what the abolitionists called God's government. That was their main like cause, to say like, this is why man should not be enslaved by man, because there's a higher authority over his life. And so if you want to approach it however you want, you can. And I know there's like the dog Latin terminology and all that. You can approach it however you want. I'm not going to stop you. I just think that there are better approaches to this, and such as learning how to speak to people in person with asking questions and getting them thinking about their own mindset so they can unenslave their mind. This is the type of strategy I would want to talk to people about, rather than what terminology do we use? What paperwork do I sign? How do I sign that paperwork? That's not actually going to change the world, unfortunately. And I'm sorry if this is like, you know, me just going brutal on the assemblies or anybody who talks about common law, but it's still a man-made system, and we need to recognize that. We're trying to compensate for our failure. And every attempt throughout history to try to create a system that is better than the previous often just flip-flops on itself and creates an even worse scenario. Now, the reason why is because we still never hit the root cause. Okay, because it sounds like a generalization I just made. I said often, I pretty much can guarantee you, if you replace one system with another system, even if you think the best people are in charge or the best laws are present, the fact that you still have statism present will make everything just turn back into chaos. And I'm trying to end that cycle of history, which is very possible. If you study the Teitler cycle or Toynbee and his works, you can understand there's a cycle to history which can be ended if you end this dangerous belief system, which is called the most dangerous religion, the most dangerous superstition by Larkin Rose, the end of all evil by Jeremy Locke, or the one true divide by Mark Passio.
Well, yeah, that's right. Laura's mind is blowing up there. Okay, so we do have a question in chat. How should society regulate immoral behavior?
Yeah. The word regulate, I don't know if that's an issue too, like on the assembly side, for instance, but I don't have an issue with regulate. Like, I understand the context. Like, how do we deal with immoral behavior? How do we, you know, try to fix it? How do we make it better? Well, for one, we can look at today's society and we could say, well, all these systems of order that we create have actually just been creating chaos. And this is why we're trying to figure out new ways of handling things. So we try to pass new laws, we try to put new people in office, and we try to create new regulations to make immoral actions into hopefully moral actions, or to prevent immoral people from being in society, or whatever way you want to look at it. But generally, most people don't want to do harm to another. Most people know what is right and wrong. So where does the issue go wrong? There's a small exception of people in the world who are psychopaths. There's a small exception of people who want to do wrong in the world. I'm not saying that's my justification for saying let's do away with these. I'm saying that there is a belief system behind the regulation part of it. So people understand what is moral and what is immoral generally. Now, some people may not, which is why Mark Passio in his natural law seminar strictly talks about morality and saying, this is what's right, this is what's wrong. These are what your rights are. And your rights are basically anything that doesn't cause harm. Your rights are basically anything that, you know, belongs to you. No victim, no crime. And so anything that is a voluntary action. Okay, now again, I don't need to come from that perspective. I don't need to come from that argument. But if you do go down that route, you understand what I'm also saying. So there's several ways to approach this scenario. People, for instance, let's say somebody's aggressing against another individual. Well, you can protect that individual, right? You can protect yourself. I think this is the whole reason why we have the Second Amendment. But really, it's just stating a fact, a natural fact of reality, which is that you have the right to defend yourself. Every human being should have that right, should they not? And so we can write it down on a piece of paper, but is it writing it down on a piece of paper that makes it true? This is my question. This is where the belief system comes in. When we pass someone into office or pass a law, is that what changes morality? Or is morality not changed by the whims, the opinions, the arbitration of man? So these are the questions I talk about when it comes to this belief system. I ask particularly five questions in most of my videos, and I pretty much end most of my videos with these questions on purpose because I want you to think about it. It took me a long time to think about it. I was very in that mindset of we need politics to change things. And in 2016, I was actually like very pro-Trump, right-winger. You know, I had everything. My dad even worked for him. Like, I knew a lot of people close to him. I held the door open for people at the polls. I mean, I was all in, right? And so I was definitely in that mindset, and I didn't see a greater picture, even though all my life I've held with me the fact that nature is the answer. I never applied it to politics. It was like a given exception. Like, yeah, it's okay for some people to rule over other human beings. And, you know, as long as it's a good person, as long as it's a good law, but is there such a thing as a good authority or a good law? Because again, there's a difference between people, and there's a difference between this idea of authority. There's a difference between morality, and there's a difference between what we call legality. And so this difference seems to not be within the population, much because we've been trained into a mindset at a very young age to think that if you're actually an authority figure, you're exempt from morality, that you can actually tell someone to do something and the order followers, anybody who is under that government, must obey and do what they're told. And so that obeying mindset is statism. The idea that someone can be an authority figure, that's statism. And that is mental slavery. So now you just got the whole rundown of what that means. Okay. So how do we regulate society? How do we treat, you know, immoral people? I don't want to go past treatment. I want to go into prevention. Well, it's preventing the aggregation of immoral behavior, because there will always be immoral people. There will always be crime. There will always be people who do wrongdoing. The question is, how do we legitimize wrongdoing and allow it to grow? There's only one way. It's if we create an authority in man and say that he is allowed to do wrong because he's an authority, because I was told to, because my king says so, because of this justification for the greater good, for the collective. And again, this is the root cause to everything in the World War II, you know, century, where Hitler, this one man, is seen as a savior. People are begging down. You can see them on video. People are crying and they're cheering and they're applauding for Hitler. He's going down the streets. He saved us from communism. He saved our economy. He made everything better. This one man, this authority figure, they bow down to him like a god, a second god. And they treat government as a religion, because statism is a religion. It's your mind believing that there's an authority in man. So, you know, you can still believe in God as long as you believe in a God called government, because if you don't, you're going to be thrown into a cage. If you don't, this is what's going to happen to you. Then you're enslaved, because they get to choose what to do with your own property, whether that's your labor, what you do with your own body, fruits of your labor, that's something you own, that's ownership. If you say that someone else has the right to your ownership, you're saying that you don't own you. You own 5% of you? Do you own 20% of you? 50%? No, you own 100% of you. Why would you not own 100% of your property? So if we want to get something done in society, how do we get it done? Well, let's look at how everything gets done in society without government. Voluntary interaction, the free market. If there's a demand, there will be a supply. How do we prevent a burglar from going into our house? How do we secure our property? Well, it starts with you. It starts with our fellow friends and family. It starts with our neighbors. We can't rely on some authority figures to do that for us, because then we centralize the power and we create an involuntary relationship and we give these people the authority to somehow play God. See, you can have voluntary police stations. You can have voluntary systems of security. Absolutely. People hire bodyguards too if they need to, right? If they feel like they're so insecure. People, if they feel like they can't protect themselves, they can do all sorts of things. We live in the age of technology. We have security cameras. And yet, we still don't think that's enough. And in fact, it actually makes governments more dangerous, because now they have that technology to use it against their own populace. Now, because of all the centralization of power, they can actually use that to spy on their citizens, to control them even further, because we gave them that power. And we gave them that power through this belief system. But if we didn't give them that power in the first place, guess what? A lot of people will have billions of different solutions for everything. And there would be so much competition. There'd be so much innovation. The gas prices would just go down on its own. Everything would just solve itself, because this is the natural spontaneity of the universe. Nature does everything without thinking or planning. There is no structure in nature. Everything just happens of its own. Your heart never skips a beat. Your lungs never forget to breathe. We have lost our trust, which is our actual government. Trusting other human beings, live and let live, the golden rule, do unto others. But we break that the minute we say and create the justification and say, we need to pass this law for this reason, that reason. How is that law going to be backed by violence against peaceful people? Otherwise, it's not a law. Otherwise, it's a voluntary agreement. It's an organization. It's a business. Now, what makes a mafia or gang different from a government? Well, they're actually quite similar. But guess what? The mafia or gang is seen as immoral. The government is seen as moral. Why is that? Because they're seen as authority. Our statist mindset looks at certain human beings and says, well, they're wearing a suit and tie. They have this title. They have this position. Therefore, they have more rights than everybody else. They can do this, which no one else can do. So that is what I'm talking about. And once you end that, then you will have the regulation that I speak of, where it's voluntary, and you see it with everything else outside of politics. You see it in the food industry nowadays. You see it, like, people need food. There's a demand. There's going to be a supply. Okay, so people will get together and they will do it. And we see this everywhere. Like, just start looking around and you'll realize humans are generally pretty good. They're not that bad. Like, there are bad people in the world, and they tend to create more bad people in the world. And those bad people also seek power, but we don't need to give those bad people power. And we can actually recognize that since most people are good, we can trust them and we can build relationships with them, and we can actually obligate people to be responsible for their own lives rather than giving that responsibility away and saying it's handled by some authority figures that we barely know or that we believe we know, and that has to be given a paycheck by our stolen money by the threat of violence, in passing laws that are done by the threat of violence against peaceful people. So there's so much better ways to handle things, and any voluntary solution I'm all for. Okay, there's going to be people setting up common law courts in a free world. There's going to be people setting up defense, you know, solutions. There's going to be people setting up all sorts of things. And people can choose how they want to live for themselves. As long as you let other people live how they want and it's a reciprocal relationship, that is what we call voluntarism. So there's statism, which is the problem, and then voluntarism, which is the solution. The simple idea that all interactions between humans should be voluntary. That's it. And you can look at abolitionist Charles Lane, where he talks about a voluntary government. And all his fellow abolitionists were like, well, then it's not really government, is it? And that was a funny little thing that happened in the 1800s, because, again, they were some of the first to really start to recognize this. So you had Amos Alcott, who was one of the first transcendentalists. He's known as, like, if you know about transcendentalism, I know you guys are writers, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, they were abolitionists, and they wrote fantastic texts. They also talked about this problem. You can look up civil disobedience, you know, and Henry David Thoreau says that government is best that doesn't govern at all. But in order to get there, we have to educate people. We have to free their minds. And the same thing with the Tao Te Ching, which is an ancient text way before the Bible, which actually is the second most translated work in the world after the Christian Bible. And what does it say? It says, if everybody lived with the Tao, which is the way translated in Chinese, then there would be no need for government. And Zhuangzi, Lao Tzu, the Chinese philosophers at the time said the same thing, which is why I talk about Taoism, and they talk about the synchronicity and spontaneity within the natural harmony of the universe. And how Confucius and his ideas of, well, man is intrinsically evil, so we need to pass laws and structure society, and how that just flip-flopped on itself. They understood that. That's why Lao Tzu left China. He's like, Confucius is ruining China with his laws and rituals. He thinks that this will make man better. No, it's not. It's going to make man worse, because now they're looking up to deities. They're looking up to man as God. They're looking up to now giving, you know, sacrificing themselves for the greater good. Basically sacrificing individualism and giving away the individual for a statistic, for an identity, part of this society. You notice people are worshiping the flag. They're told to respect the veterans and the people who fight in wars against people they don't know across the seas. And people are supposed to, like, respect these individuals who are going to war. War is not a good thing. It's not the one person that gives the order that's the problem. It's the millions of people that follow them. They're the ones that actually carry out the actions. I can tell you, hey, go do this. And you don't have to do it. You are the final arbiter. But see, if you're mentally enslaved, you're going to think I have to do it because you told me to. And that's it. Because, well, who am I? Am I a slave owner? Am I, like, someone special? What gives me the right to tell you how to live your own life? Well, a lot of people actually believe nowadays that a lot of people that we call government, anybody who presumes that position, can do that. And so... And by the way, another word terminology game for you, a lot of libertarians like to differentiate government versus the state. They'll say the state is that thing which causes violence, and government is just people coming together in its community. So whatever you want to look at term-wise, as long as you understand the context of what I'm saying, voluntary interaction over violent interaction, then let's make that the framework for society. And then everything will settle out on its own. And so that's my answer to that. And I, of course, go deeper into it with Taoism and other perspectives. And if you want, I can clarify on any particular perspective.
Okay. Well, so much there, Corey. Yeah. And I also just wanted to bring it around to this, what is most important people need to know, you know, in a minute, and just zeroing in on that so you can help anybody who wants to participate in your project. Go ahead, Valerie.
Well, I just wanted to ask a question about the book about personalized health and how it's all connected to all other topics. Just out of curiosity, it would be interesting to know better how you connect these things.
I think health is super important. If you're going to free your mind, it helps a lot to have mental acuity and to knowing your own mind, it helps to have clear thinking. It helps to have a mind that is free from the world and therefore lacks scarcity, actually rather has abundance. So that can be whether it's growing your own food. Food forest is something I've been talking about quite a bit recently. And I'm in Florida. There's a lot of people growing food forests and there's abundance. And that is not only feeding the world, but also healing the world. And, you know, not to mention that's a great thing for the economy and for bringing people together and for healing the atmosphere and so many things. I mean, it's just abundance of reasons why that is considered another solution. Do you ever wonder why? Nature is the answer, right? So you can apply that on politics, but you can apply it also to health. Absolutely. Because basically that's the underlying tie, is you're recognizing there's the nature of the human body. It's designed to heal itself. The nature of the world is it's designed to keep itself in order. But if we suppress that order because we think we need to go on a certain diet, we need to do this or do that, we actually restrict our methodology. Not that it's bad for an individual to choose to go on their diet because they're doing it voluntarily. But once they say to someone else, you have to go on this diet and this is the best pill and this is the best medicine and you should take this, notice what has happened. Society has gone backwards, even though people had good intent. They thought, oh, well, everybody should do this because it's really good. Guess what? There's a lot of different people in different environments. You cannot impose what you think is right for the world. And that's all I'm saying when it comes to voluntarism is I don't have a strategy for the world. I don't have a structure for the world. I don't have a solution for the world because there isn't supposed to be just one. I'm not supposed to be the only arbiter. I'm not God. I'm not truth. I'm not nature. There's a trust and integrity in the process and humility in recognizing that we are all equal. And therefore, even if I have expertise that you don't, I share that with you voluntarily and I don't impose it on anybody. That's what a real leader is, somebody who's inspiring, who you want to follow, not somebody who says you have to follow because I said so, because I have this title and this authority. See? This is where statism twists the idea of leadership. And that's why people think it's okay to have governments and have doctors over their life. Like doctors are different, again, because they're more voluntary. But still, you can see that there's this dynamic within society because we have this top-down law of correspondence, the Hermetic principle. It's an ancient principle, which is that so as above, so as below. So as you have this very authoritarian left brain imbalanced yang-based society where you have people who control other human beings, you're going to have doctors who adopt that same mindset, which is why I really appreciate women who are healers and women who are like health coaches, because this is a whole new growing field in medicine. And, you know, when I was taking health coaching in school, like I was surrounded by women. There were like no men. And I was like, this is awesome because they're actually the real caretakers and nurturers of this world. Because they have this feminine aspect to them that is being lost in this very dominative society. See, this yin aspect, which the Tao is also correlated with, yin is correlated with it, is being lost because of all the, you must do this. This is the only way. And this is how things should be structured. It's very yang based. So going to that natural medicine Eastern perspective, whether it's in philosophy or medicine or anything else, is very core, especially in the West, where we've adopted all these ideas of authoritarianism ultimately. So it's just something to bear in mind. The East has fallen to those ideas too, right? I talked about Confucius and those ideas being correlated to that of the West, but getting out of that is so simple. I'm telling you, it's like letting go. And it's not the new age position of let's just meditate all day and all your problems will go away. It's no, saying no. It's standing on principle and letting life be actually. Because you can let life be and just meditate while you're still in the system, promoting the system because you're not speaking up against it. Or you can be actually outside of the system. Say no. Put in your whole heart and service into saying no. And, you know, you're actually not participating in evil. You're actually not doing anything. The Wu Wei principle in Taoism, which means effortless effort. It means letting things flow. It's like being on a river and not allowing yourself to get stuck, being able to constantly flow and change with the times, which notice laws will have a very hard time with change. Every time we pass a law, it's like, oh, what if we have flying cars tomorrow? It's like, there goes all the traffic laws. It's like, what are we going to do? We have to make new laws. Constantly, these things are changing. Impersonation laws. We have AI now that can replicate anybody's voice, anybody's look. I mean, soon we're not going to know what's real anymore. These are questionable circumstances which people try to answer, but they cannot recognize what is future reality because it's future. It's not present. health has a lot to do with this. Mentally, people are going to be stressed and confused with everything that's going on. And if we don't bring it down to that individual level, which is everybody needs to change, the masses. I'm not saying we change the people in power. I'm saying we change ourselves, which is a hard statement to say, I'm the problem. A lot of people don't want to say that. They want to point the finger and say, these authority figures are the problem. But by doing so, they're legitimizing statism because they're saying that someone else should take that position and that they still have that mindset in themselves. So it really is an individualized, personalized health journey when you address your own mindset in the holistic way, meaning you also eat healthy or you try your best to eat healthy. You eat what you know you should eat or you listen to your body. And how often do we really listen to nature? If we're being told what to do, told what to think, told what to eat, right? So this is a correlative concept you'll find through all my works.
Mm-hmm. And in your life, like you recently moved to Florida, you can try to think for yourself, but it's really sometimes you confront this reality. And a lot of people who try not to be like nonconformists or whatever you call them, they have to, let's say, move away. They have to adjust their lives to be that independent. So how far you're willing to go to be independent, not to back down under the pressure. Like a couple of years ago, all of us were in this enforced vaccination in Canada. And I myself, I had a job and I was threatened to be, you know, fired if I don't get this vaccine, but I need a paycheck. What are you going to do? To move to where? To a village or where? Because you can't sustain yourself in a big city. So it's kind of a lot of blabber, but I'm just wondering, in your life, in your own example of your life, did you move to Florida because the circumstances of your life compelled you to make some choices for your health or for your, I don't know, this sustainable agricultural kind of community? Or what's the motivation? Why did you do that? And or how you managed to do it in your personal life to make these difficult choices?
I actually didn't have to come to Florida. I could have stayed in the peaceful countryside in Pennsylvania and not be bothered by people and probably be more prepared. And we probably could have paid off the house and had no problems. So we could have stayed there. But why did we choose to move? Because I wanted to reach more people with this message. And Jim Gale did the same thing. Jim Gale, Food Forest Abundance. He's 3 hours from me in St. Cloud. He has a 50-acre food forest. We just started that last year. His plants are already fully grown because he works with nature. He works with the natural spontaneity, the intelligence, with the order within nature, and simply allows it into being. And he's a good example of this type of spontaneous order in action. And I talk about that in my Taoist book as well, which I think is also really good, by the way, for any new readers, anybody who's totally new to everything I'm saying. It goes into all these ideas through that ancient philosophy, which is very trusting, very peaceful, allows you to recognize there's a peace of mind that about history and about how things flow. People worry about a bunch of things they don't really need to worry about, at least from the way I see it in studying that philosophy. Yeah, so I came to Florida, but here's the thing. I networked with people in Pennsylvania too. There's people everywhere. There's people, you just got to find them. I have a lot of friends in Canada, a lot, who are from the Truth Movement. And a lot of them just came down to Florida for the event that we did, which was massive. It had like over 30 speakers. And this is our first event that we've ever done. It's called Path to Freedom. And we did this again at Food Forest Abundance. And it was awesome. Like if we keep this going, I do think that independent media, with the resources they have now, they have millions of listeners. InfoWars literally brags and says, we have more viewers than CNN. And then they're in like a $1 billion lawsuit. If I had that much money and that many people following my work, something should have changed. At least that's my point of view. For 20 years doing this type of work and not really getting any change out of it, you can be highly skeptical. Well, it's because InfoWars never talks about statism. They've never once ever had an anarchist or abolitionist on their platform. They've had the first one, actually, Mark Passio, which is, you know, one of my teachers, I would consider, from Philadelphia. I actually got to meet him in person because he was from Pennsylvania. So that was pretty awesome. And so Pennsylvania was nice, you know, but it was changing. There were New Yorkers coming down to the area and trashing the state because New Yorkers have a certain attitude, which you can tell. But my parents are from New York. And it's funny because they don't like it either. They don't like the way their neighborhood changed. There's this culture that is being manipulated, and that changes people's minds, and their minds then affect the world that they live in. So the people who control the world know this. They change the culture, they change the minds, they can get people to obey flags, to obey symbols, to obey people in power, they'll put it in the movies, in the television, they'll put it everywhere, right? And so it's just something that we're so used to. I mean, that goes for anything. That can go for medicine too, right? But you look in the East and they have similar methods, but you can see some parts where they're succeeding and some parts where they're not. Same thing in the West. You see some parts where we're succeeding, some parts where not. Like in the East, they're learning meditation. They're learning how to defend themselves in martial arts. And these things, it's like, why aren't we learning that in America? And also Europe, they have better food. They have better medicine sometimes. It's like, why don't we have that in America? So it's just about bringing these ideas together, and the same thing with the people. I actually believe there's millions of people in independent media all around us, and we just have to find them, and that we can actually create change overnight if we wanted to. And all we have to do is just bring those people together and then say no. And that's literally it. I'm not saying sign your paperwork a certain way. I'm not saying, you know, do this or do that. I'm saying, like, don't participate in a statist act. So that means one town or one community together says, we're not going to pay taxes. We're not going to do this. And they're going to stand their ground, and they can film it, and they can show the rest of the world they'll be peaceful, just like Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. Stand their ground, look vulnerable, actually don't have weapons on them. Show to the world that you are peaceful, and the evil will expose itself, because non-resistant protests are actually the most effective throughout all of history. And I've done several series on this on purpose. Even Jesus did it, apparently, in the Bible. He stripped himself naked in court and exposed the court for the evil that they were. There is a bunch of scenarios like this throughout history where, you know, the evil doer will do it. And this is why a lot of veterans go to war and they have trauma after they go to war. They realize, oh, shoot, I killed a bunch of people I wasn't supposed to, and I was in the scenario, or my friends died and all this stuff. It's like, why should anybody go through this experience? Right? As a human being, this takes away this innocence, this mystery, this beauty that's in life. And that's what I'm trying to uphold, especially since I'm of a younger generation. I care about that for my generation deeply. And so getting down to nature has everything to do with it. Do network within your area. I create a networking page on theliberator.us, which is my website. And I created recently an In Real Life section as well. So we have two contacts in Canada at the moment, one in Quebec and one in Ontario, which are pretty close to each other at the moment. But I know there's a lot of others in Canada. Like, I meet them all the time. So it's just a matter of those people connecting with each other. There's people everywhere, I'm telling you.
Yeah, so I have a question in the chat. Laura has something, and Connie wanted to speak. And so I need to know if you can stay a bit longer and if others sure. can stay a bit longer, another 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's all good.
Everybody? That would be awesome. Okay, so what is your take on animism, nature being alive, the myth of human supremacy?
Who asked that question? That's a very deep question.
Stuart.
So that's a good question for pretty much anybody in the Mark Pascoe community, that you're going to vibe with them like immediately, because they go into deep aspects of the occult and different aspects of like human psychology through ancient times. Basically, that's basically the occult in a nutshell, is like the hidden sciences, the hidden philosophies of the time. And animism is apparently like the root to a lot of religions and spirituality. So I know that much about it. I don't know too much about it. So I will just be honest with you and say, I'm not going to speak on something I don't know too much about. But you do say nature being alive, the myth of human supremacy. I could probably agree with those two statements. So in that context, absolutely. You know, the fact that humans don't really have as much control as they think they do. They attempt all sorts of things. Maybe that's the point of view. Or nature being alive. I mean, the fact that everything's constantly moving, that there's a vibrational energy. If you bring everything down to the molecular level, you notice there's things constantly moving. This is also another hermetic principle. It's called the principle of vibration. So there's other principles. There's the principle of polarity. There's the principle I mentioned of correspondence, which was as above, so below. There's the principle of mentalism, which is that all is mind, that our minds create the world. There's other ones like the principle of rhythm, that there's an ebb and flow to everything. You can look these up. There's about seven hermetic principles. And the eighth one, Mark Pascoe calls care, because if you don't care, you know, then nothing will manifest and care is ultimately this generative principle, he calls it. Care is what we need in this life, right, to actually create change or create anything we want to create.
Okay, thank you for that. Laura, go ahead.
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you for all of that. And I kind of just wanted to bring in a perspective of dimensionality in relation to what you're talking about in a seemingly left-wing kind of way, but just I would love to see if it lands and how, because of the high level you went to be able to understand all that you have. So basically, the first dimension is the one-dimensional label of an identity or construct that we take on and believe ourselves to be. To belong to a two-dimensional counterfeit version of reality, such as what we're on right now, where we've all zoomed in from our respective places in this planety, with heart being Earth in a different order. And so we're all holding our spots and feeling really connected, yet it's through an interface that requires us have a profile in order to file into that space that feels really real while we're in it, but we have to have the interface in order to be in it. Compared to the 3D, which is real, and I'm here whether something is on outside of me or not. And then the fourth dimension is the mind that actually creates the mental constructs that give meaning to the one and two dimensional realities masquerading as three dimensional truth. And then fifth dimension is actually the heart, where we can sense the resonance of truth. So we're no longer in our head making rational decisions, which is what humanism is all about, compared to when we're in our heart and we can feel the resonance of truth and we have the care and connection with one another to actually say, hey, I recognize them because they were on some other version of reality. And then now they're part of my reality because I recognize them in a different space outside of where we first met specifically. So I don't know whether that helps in any way with what you're trying to say, but I do believe that it's really important for people to start understanding these one-dimensional boxes of words that we give syntax and meaning to in order to put them into order and screw ourselves with.
Yeah, that's good. I love that. No, I really do. I don't talk much about dimensions. I don't go too deep into spiritual stuff. Like I said, a lot of people in the community do, so they're probably better to reach out to for that type of thing. I try to stay more on the common level of people only because I don't want to alienate myself more than I already have to an extent, but I am a truth seeker, and what you're saying definitely resonates a lot with what I have learned about stuff.
Cool. Thank you. This was awesome tonight. Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, you're great. You're really good at speaking.
Thank you, Corey. I feel very blessed to be here. Lynn and I actually were at a weekend together, and she's an all-star. I'm excited to have come down to my neck of the woods to be at the next Lawfully Organized Summit that just got started to get organized yesterday, actually. So I'm really excited to meet you because literally slavery is the enslavement of the mind to believe ourselves to be the constructs that find us in smaller and smaller cells under the rule of a death cult that is a corpse only empowered by real men and women who pay the price with our souls, which is why all of this has been designed to make us less whole and have our soul on the line, but with the soul ties connected through strong emotions that people aren't seeing. When all of that venom is directed at someone, do you really dislike them enough to want to actually leave yourself connected to them after you leave here? So you have to come back and clear that which you didn't clear when you came here as to why you recorded them maybe energetically in the first place, to magnetize them into your space, but then to actually have the compounded effect of not dealing with your shit in this life. Let's just solve it instead of resolve that which we didn't solve the first time. So it shows up in the now to be resolved. So let's just solve it the first time. My thoughts. Thanks again.
Thank you, Laura. We lost Connie. She had to go, I guess. Okay, so Alicia, Stephanie, Valerie, I really appreciate your contribution so much. Stephanie's coming in.
Thank you, Corey, so much for your time and your perspective. That was awesome. I really appreciated that. I'm going to go and check with the rest of the And I'm really interested in learning more about these food forest things. I recently exited the matrix physically and have spent the last year sort of getting, you know, stepping even more out of it. Right now I've got a greenhouse, but I'm looking at, like, I've got a ton of property. So learning more about how to do all of that. Right now I'm just sort of like, okay, well, learning as you go type thing. And but yeah, I'm interested in learning more. So I'll be checking you out. Thank you again so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, food forest, I'm still learning myself as well. There's a lot of strategies people use to grow food. It's awesome.
Yeah. I love it. It's like going back to stepping back into who what we should have been doing all along.
Yep. That's
not
it.
Reliant on psychopaths to, you know, all of that stuff.
And you can't tug on a plant to make it grow. You have to learn how to let go and act only when necessary. For instance, I'm near a wetlands and I barely have to water my plants. But if you put them in the right soil in the right environment, plants can do very well on their own. And this is like the whole principle of permaculture is you work with the natural environment and nature will benefit you. You know, we can't try to make nature work. We can't fix nature. There is no fix in nature to begin with, right? We thinking we have to fix nature, like vaccinate a baby like 90 times now to make them healthy. This is the symptom management I speak of. Whereas if we get to the root cause, it is, again, recognizing that, well, nature is the answer and that man does not have this authority over nature or his fellow man.
So right on point when you talk, like I always call it the battle for the minds of the masses, right? And we've just been brainwashed to believe that this is the only way it can be. And, you know, this is how it has to be and too bad for you. When it, you know, the reality is completely opposite, and I get into consciousness and all that. So I think, like, ultimately you're right on so many points, and the mind is a massive part of it. Absolutely.
Also what Laura said too, being able to recognize what is seen as the perspective of the problems of the mind, like being able to go from our heart, right? Like Gandhi constantly talked about like the heart as his motive for going to jail for his belief system. He's like, you can do anything to my body, but you cannot take my heart. You cannot take my mind. You cannot take my soul. Like that was his mindset. And because of that, he was basically invincible, you know, and it allowed him to move on in a way that the people actually literally had to visit him in the jail cell to make a compromise with him in order to make the people that followed Gandhi happy. And Gandhi did not seek authority. Again, he was like a natural leader. People looked up to him. He didn't use weapons. People were inspired by him. I mean, that's kind of why he got killed too. But, you know, that's kind of how it works, right? But guess what? We have technology now. We have the ability. Like, you can't find much footage on Gandhi, actually. You can find a lot more footage on Hitler, which is from like the same era, which is crazy. But like, you can't find a lot on Gandhi. Now we have so much more of an ability to spread a message and to show it in action. There were people who set up towns in the abolitionist. There was one town that was like 15 years with no government whatsoever during the abolitionist times. It was called Modern Times, but no one knew about it. You know, like if people knew about it, that stuff would have kept going. But like at the time you had the Civil War and all the stuff that was obligating those people who lived in those towns to leave. And, everybody enjoyed it there. You can look up the residents of Hopedale community. It's another one. All these towns were part of the Underground Railroad. Some of them had no taxes and they allowed slaves to run away to these towns to escape their governments because the governments were connected to slavery and the abolitionists saw this and they're like, we need to leave the whole system. So like you had someone like, well, I think it was Jeremiah Hacker, might have been another individual who did Fruitlands. That was a collaborative project. And that was another scenario where they grew food on their own. So just like that, food forest can do a lot.
Yeah. And you're so right. Like scientifically speaking, it's getting back to the heart, right? Living from the heart. Again, that's exactly what changes the entire quantum field and everybody in it. And it doesn't require a large percentage of people to do it. Like I believe at this point right now, we've got enough people to shift the entire quantum field and everybody in it.
If we recognize statism as what's holding our minds back, because our minds should work with our heart. Right. Like our body systems, like we have all these for a reason. We can get convoluted in our mind. Our mind may not be clear in thinking rationally. And that's why we structure society and we forget the heart in ourselves. We don't have a conscience. We'll just do something because we are told to do it. This is us using our brain and not our heart. And also we can be swayed too much by our heart and think we're doing something so right. And because someone looks so good and because they have such an emotional argument, a politician goes on stage and makes me feel good. So it's about recognizing the heart and mind work together, and that if you don't address that statist mindset, you will always have problems because the heart and the mind are not working together, essentially, because you're not using it yourself. You're giving it away.
That's exactly it. You've got your conscious mind and your subconscious mind, and the majority of the population operates from their subconscious programmed mind 95 to 99% of the time. So it's also sharing with people, like, this is how your mind works, right? There's your programmed mind, and then there's the conscious you living from the heart, living in alignment, living in truth and higher states of consciousness mind, right? And you can feel a difference, you know, when you're in alignment. So it's getting back to that heart, getting back to like learning, teaching people about their programmed mind, and even watching the actors on the main stages it will take you into lower states of consciousness. And right now, we need as many people living in these higher states as possible in order to shift the entire quantum field. From my perspective, it's time to turn off the matrix. You know, it's garbage. It's a show. It's deception. It's manipulation. It's mind control. Even look at the word governmente, you know?
Yes. And mind control. Right.
Go on and on. So I'll
Gravano and mentis. Yes. Yeah. That does mean mind control. Mark Pascio is actually known for getting that out to a lot of people. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah. Like once he started sharing that, everybody started saying it. It was insane. Because his seminar went really big on that. His natural law seminar had like several hundreds of thousands of views. And that's how I got connected with the community. We all got connected after some of that work. And now he's teaching other teachers to be teachers. He's teaching people how to use technology to create content. So that way we can share the message, because he doesn't want to be the only person doing it. He recognizes that, you know, he shouldn't be the only person doing it. If he wants this message to be big, everybody's got to be doing their part. Yeah. To some extent, you know, and there's a lot of people behind the scenes that do a lot of great work and they don't produce content. So it's just depending on finding your way of producing it. That's why I created the liberator.us. It's a great way for anybody to get involved, and I can help people out as well.
Laura wants to know who this natural law teacher is who you keep mentioning.
Yeah, I'll write it down.
Write his name. Perfect.
You'll love him with this perspective. With the heart and all that stuff, the spiritual stuff that you guys go into, you'll love Mark Pascio. He's very deep into that.
Okay, Laura, just before we come back to you, Alicia, go ahead.
I just want to thank you, Corey. I did start watching your 1 3-hour documentary, found it very impressive, and sent it off to a few people that I know. I guess you could call a newly awakened person over the whole COVID thing. Yeah, Steph's been there helping me through it all and learning to calm myself, and now I'm kind of learning. I've built a bus and bought some property, and we're gonna try and, you know, do the whole gardening thing and getting back to the old days, and we're heating by wood, and we've got animals, pigs, and chickens. And
show people. Like, people would love to see that. Anyone in my generation, too. Like, you can think that whatever they think, just bring them there. Let them experience it. Get them, like, feeling that energy. Because it's a whole different thing than talking to someone, trying to convince them of something. This is not our strategy. You know, rather, we have to come from an open position, learn from them, ask them questions, and then show them what it looks like. Because this food forest I went to, Jim Gale's place, anybody who walks in that place, doesn't matter what they're thinking, you know, their energy's brought back up. There was a guy who was delivering pizza who came in, and he was like my age, and he was like, wow, what is this place? What, I've never seen this before, you know, and he lived there. He was local to the area, but it's crazy.
Yeah, and that's what I try to do, is just stay away from. I haven't watched news in probably 10 years or so, probably more than that. And I try to stay away from it because it puts you in such a state that, I don't know, my life is so much better not watching it, just building my dreams, right? Work on your own dreams and head towards that goal and bring whoever wants to come with you.
Because you don't need to. That's why people think they need to watch the news. They need a smartphone with them at all times. They need the vaccine. This idea of need has basically equivocated individuals thinking that there's things part of nature that aren't. So when people say we need a government, we need this vaccine, they assume that it's part of nature, like part of the fabric of reality, and that we cannot live without it. And because of that, they actually like say that, you know, we have to have man-made controlling everything. I wrote about that particular perspective where I just nail it right to the point. That one is my book, Government is Unnatural, Anarchy is Natural. So I just straight up say it, right? But, and I talk a lot about that perspective of like, what if government is just trying to replace nature itself, its authority? And no one's ever really looked at it through that lens. But because I am like more of my own internal philosopher coming from my own like nature point of view, I was able to deliver that perspective. So it's not one that you're going to find necessarily anywhere else. And it's not one that, you know, I did research for or anything. No, this is coming from my own philosophy point of view, studying the nature of the world, studying medicine and seeing how that could be applied to the world, like from individuals to the world. Like, how do we heal the world? Not just heal an individual. Let's not just heal health. Let's heal the world and their health. Let's prevent all manifestations of disease. You know, let's look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to do that about 3 years before COVID. I was diagnosed with diabetes. I reversed it with keto.
Wow. Congratulations.
I had a choice. It's either I die slowly and pump myself with medicine or I turn to food.
Yeah.
So I turned to food.
Awesome. So you like did the research and all that and you took the willpower, you took the first steps and then you, I love it. See, and that's the thing like too, is like, we just have to open the door, take the first steps, and then things usually start to work on its own over time. And that's that Wu Wei principle of like flowing with the stream, being able to flow. It's like, it becomes effortless over time. It's like you first learn how to ride a bike. You're going to fall a couple times, you know, you learn how to cook. You might, you know, spill something by accident, but over time you get so skillful at it, it becomes effortless. And that's kind of the goal, I think, when it comes to sharing these truth concepts with others or practicing it within our own life. And yeah, I love it. I think that's great that you did that.
Well,
so cool.
Thank you, Alicia. That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that and being here so promptly. Well,
thank you for having me.
Okay, so Laura, you had something. And also, I would love just to have a 1 minute sample from somebody. Just a little tester for this 1 minute challenge from Corey. So Laura, if you can be brief with what you want to say.
I completely forgot because I am completely curious what this 1 minute challenge is. So please carry on there. I look forward to connecting and would love to see where we might be able to overlap as well. So yay, sure. Thank you. Such a valuable Friday evening.
Yeah, it's awesome. Should I share a little bit just like what the 1 minute question is? Yeah. So basically it's just, what is the most important like thing or idea or what is just important that people should know from your own perspective, your own unique perspective? What is it that people should know? Like for 1 minute straight, whatever comes to your mind, speak to it.
May I do my minute about the fact that people need to know?
Yeah, just hold on.
Just going to time you.
I'm going to time you.
Goodness, it's going to be right official. People need to know that the Mental Health Act is the modern day witch hunt legalized and normalized, that you can't vouch for your sanity if you are a third person in your own affair because you invited an agent or a middleman to speak for you and move you out of your proper or properia persona perspective, which is the office of man or woman in your first person pronoun, as an I, me, my, us, we, ours, ourself, myself perspective, compared to when we are shifted into a third person and then made to be a ward, imbecile, a lunatic, or minor, where we are then mined in heart, body, mind, and spirit by creating cords with others that we need not to be drifted ashore with, because we don't need to go into all of these capitalized versions of reality when we can actually learn to stand on land as men and women in our private capacity with all rights reserved.
Oh. Wow, you did it. That was right on a minute.
That was good.
Thank you.
Wow.
She's good.
Yeah, man.
Anybody
else want to compete with that? No, honestly, so for the 1 minute thing, like you can record it on a phone, you can record it on, like, you guys have good cameras the way it is, and I will actually edit it for you if you want, and I'll put words on the screen, just anything that comes to mind for 1 minute, even if it's less than a minute or more than a minute, I can condense it. I just want people to have a little voice on this showcase, because it's a showcase. So it's like everybody's going to do a 1 minute clip and I'm just going to like show everybody and their efforts and we're going to be talking about it. And it's going to be a whole like show series that we're doing. So yeah, that's it. 1 minute on anything. Just think about it, you guys. If you guys need help, I can schedule like an interview with you guys, or like, I mean, just like a talk one-on-one. If you need help for your 1 minute, like on gathering topics and all that, or if you want to script yourself, that's up to you.
And then you may follow up with some of these 1-minuters and have a conversation with them. You might bring them into the conversation.
That's an option that you have. After your clip is done, you can actually talk more about your clip with us when we go over the clip on the live show. So basically, after we show your 1 minute clip, we'll be like, okay, let's bring on Laura and she'll talk more about her clip, basically, something like that.
Go ahead, Alicia.
Can it be under a minute? Because
yeah. Absolutely.
I'm a talker, but I don't want it to go off the rails.
Yeah, no, you're good. Yeah. Under a minute is perfect. Most people go over a minute, so it's better than...
Okay.
Yeah, because the reason why a minute is best is because it works for the TikTok, Instagram Reel, YouTube Short algorithm, which most people consume. And so I want people to get used to that format. It's kind of like me like training people into that format in a sense, but also being able to showcase everybody in a small amount of time, which keeps people's attention.
You were encouraging people not to preempt their minute. Like you mm-hmm. want what they're going to submit to you, you'd like to be unique and to debut on your showcase, right?
Well, yeah, but like, you know, if she likes that 1 minute she just did, there's nothing wrong with using that.
And as a promotion too for the show, right?
I mean, yeah, sure. Why not?
As a sample, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It doesn't matter with me. It's fine. As long as it's a minute, like I don't care where they get it from. And as long as it showcases you, like Laura, as a person, then yeah. As a individual, darn it. No, can't use that word either. Human, can't say that word either. Woman.
We get limited when we try to figure out how to put all of what we are into.
Now you know why I don't focus on that, because it would drive me, like I'll be talking about something and then I'll run into a word and be like, oh man, I shouldn't use that word.
I do that to my nearest and dearest to me all the time. And then it's just like, ah, gosh, I don't know how to, yeah. Anyway, I think things are really changing in these online spheres in a way that we're not really talking about, because like influencers generally have been bought and paid for, it seems, largely as of late. And like, it seems even like with the, you know, certificate of Vex identity death, how many people are, you know, starting to now monetize and capitalize on even this crisis and identities formed around all of that. And now it's just like when the next shift comes, like you got to make sure we're not throwing people under the bus because we're still in communities with these people.
It's only certain topics you can't talk about. But yeah, I also did a recent video on that, a way to kind of get around a lot of that. So if you're interested, it's called Important Tips for Controversial Content Creators. So that's kind of relevant to both of us.
I say.
All righty then, Corey, this has just been awesome. We've been here for an hour and a half and it's just been packerooned. Corey, thank you so much for all that you shared and for everyone being here and showing up and contributing and filling in this amazing time. I'm really pleased.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just, it's been such a pleasure and such a kind of intellectual discussion or whatever you call it. It's just a pleasure. It was great. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Laura. Like everyone, Alicia, Stephanie, it was great. It was really great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
We will be in touch.
Cool. My main site, theliberator.us, there is just a learn here and action here button. Keep it short, sweet, and simple. I have condensed a lot of my work and really, you know, tried bringing the essentials. And so those two buttons should have everything.
You can think that a minute isn't very long, but it actually is pretty long. And if you want to focus on what you consider, you know, the most important, then you really have to consider what you want to fill in that minute.